For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Attention BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up and makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement and get a $50 bonus every time you refer a friend to BetMGM. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. Ohio only. New and existing customer offer. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bonus bets expire in 30 days. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Always one of my favorite episodes of the year here. The Ravens post-draft review. We're going to go through every pick. Joining me tonight is Jason of Huddle It Up Films. Jason, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really well. Thanks, Ken.
Yeah, great to have you on again. If you didn't join us for the draft coverage, you'll really get a sense of how prepared Jason is for this and how good a guest he is to talk over the Ravens draft picks in terms of the amount of study he did before the draft. And clearly, he provided a big board. It was a great anchor point for us as we did 2 days of coverage. And we're happy to have you on for that, Jason. Happy to have you on for that, Jason. Yes.
Well, I'm really happy to be here. And it's exhausting, the draft process. And it's kind of like, now that it's all over, I'm just looking forward to see how they fit on the team and seeing them in pads and in the training camp.
Yeah, long couple of nights, but I got to say, watching the draft the way we did each of those nights was a hell of a lot of fun. It goes much quicker than it does sitting on the couch alone, that's for sure. Particularly day two with that long wait for picks and, you know, we get to be disappointed with every good potential for the Ravens that we saw kind of dripping off the board off that time. And, you know, you hear Eric DaCosta talk about it. He felt the same way, it sounds like.
And I thought day two went faster than it normally would, being with you guys, picking so late, not having a second round pick, and then waiting all the way to 94 and 104. So it made it a lot less painful to talk over strategy. Because I don't know about your friends. My friends like football, but as far as getting into the draft, it's hard to find other people like that. So it was great.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun for sure. And the second day is a little more informal, but hope people go out there, listen to the coverage on the website, maybe join us next year. But we're here tonight to talk about this draft that's just occurred, who the players the Ravens got. We promise you Ravens-centric coverage, of course, on Film Study Baltimore. And it doesn't get any more Ravens-centric than just talking about the Ravens players they got and how they might fit into the system. I thought we'd start with some high-level points about this draft. And maybe you have some thoughts about this. Just we can alternate here. This is definitely a draft for large school talent. The Ravens had 7 Power 5 picks, 1 Group of 5 pick. The only Group of 5 pick they had was Stevens, their last third round selection. Fairly obvious, you know, these are the teams that actually played this last year.
And the other thing that I thought of was not only were they Power 5 schools, but they were players that played last year. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of opt-outs in this draft. And even when you look at a guy like Sean Wade or Away, who had better seasons in 19 than they did in 20, it's like the Ravens took into account, hey, these kids tried. They played through a bunch of stuff. And you know when they come to the NFL, a bunch of stuff's going to get thrown at them. So, hey, when the bottom line, even through a pandemic, they wanted to play, even if their play wasn't perfect, they wanted proven commodities.
Yeah, good point. I mean, the Ravens' shortage on the DL right now is really serious, in my opinion. They didn't take a defensive lineman in this draft. There were many fewer because of all these opt-outs. So there was a lot of diabetics and other issues, or, you know, potential type 2 diabetics who are in that group. Christian Barmore was there at 27. The Ravens didn't take him. They took Bateman instead. I was a little surprised, perhaps, by that. How did you feel?
I was a little surprised. I kind of bought into the hype that they were maybe going to wait on a wide receiver. I really thought that if they were going to go by needs and best players, that edge and tackle really matched up with where they were. So I was expecting a trade back and for them to say, hey, if a guy like Barmore is there and all the receivers are gone, or all the edges are gone, or all the tackles are gone, we'll take the BPA. So, the defensive line, though, it's definitely the one area I thought for sure we'd address at some point, even in the mid to late rounds. And we're going with the same crew, basically, with not knowing what's going on with Broderick Washington.
Yeah, looking ahead at this year, this Ravens defensive line is going to be a lot older this year. I mean, everybody's a year older. That's the most older you can get in one season, basically. Well, you can go out and get a free agent and get older that way. But the 2022 Ravens, even if they draft, you know, 1 to 2 players, unless they're really spotting the whole top of the draft to defensive line the way they did to inside linebacker last year, they're not going to be able to turn it over with a lot of free agent money being spent there for 2022. So that's a big eddying suckhole of dollars for 2022 that it does not allow money to be transferred to the offense easily.
Exactly. And I mean, we did get an extra fourth round pick in the draft, so maybe they can use that to acquire a veteran, but veterans are already paid. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about the financial end of it, you know, the first thing I thought of was, hey, the first two seasons of DaCosta, we've acquired Peters, and then last year, Yannick Ngakoue. So having that extra fourth round pick in 2022 by trading back, I think we have 3 fourth round picks now. Mm-hmm. That would give us ammo on a spot like the defensive line if we have some of the older guys banged up or have a serious injury there. But, you know, that's not counting money like you're saying.
So they're looking forward to that. They did not address the deficit at offensive tackle. You were a little bit surprised in the early rounds, I guess. I was also surprised they didn't take a stab at a developmental guy. And looking at their other picks, I thought they had some really uneconomical picks, meaning they drafted a guy who would have been there around later, or perhaps as a UDFA in one particular case. A lot of that did not make sense to me. And I thought, you know, there were developmental offensive tackles out there, maybe some guys the Ravens have reservations about.
Well, the UDFA we signed, Ely, I believe his last name is.
Adrian Ely.
He looks more like a left tackle when I checked him out. He's more of a pass protector than a run blocker. So maybe that's the developmental guy. I like Deontay Smith later in the draft from ECU. But, there were some guys out there. I want to say that round 4 or 5 was about the cutoff. Didn't the Buffalo Bills jumped ahead and grabbed a couple of those guys you would consider developmental?
Yes. Two of them beat us out really twice, I thought. Spencer Brown was the pick before Cleveland. And Ben Cleveland. And I think it's reasonable to think the Ravens might have taken a shot on Spencer Brown at that point. And then they also took, I believe it's Doyle they took later, who's a
Tommy Doyle, yes.
Long-armed left tackle prospect. Might be a left tackle or bust prospect, frankly, in Doyle's case. So we'll see how that goes. Adrian Ely, 33-inch arms. So he's not a guy that had to be drafted. Also, very much like Orlando Brown, totally bombed in the combine.
Exactly. Yes. I think that's why he went undrafted, because, his tape is his pass protection. When I watched two games of him today, it looked pretty good. But his bend and some other technical things need some improvement. That's why I would put him in the developmental category. But as far as being light on his feet, Ealy's got some left tackle in him. So, but yeah, I was surprised we didn't address tackle at some point. I think most Ravens fans were as well.
Yeah, that'd be interesting because, you know, one of the things we've talked about is the possibility of Cleveland moving to tackle. Maybe Ealy moves to guard with the Ravens. That seems like a much more reasonable position assignment than left tackle and left guard to me. Just at that kind of arm length and with his other measurables. And I say combine, I'm probably going to say that four times on the show. We know there was no combine. Pretty significant issue in terms of not necessarily having consistent numbers.
For sure. Some of these guys' numbers, when I went back and looked, and I'm like, it just doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. But I like the fact that, once again, we doubled up. And I thought the Tylan Wallace, I know we'll talk about the players individually, mm-hmm. but that was the one case where we drafted, he just stuck out on the board, at least to me on my board. So I was proud that even though we had a couple of picks that nobody saw coming, that we did take the value when it was there in Wallace, Wade, guys like that.
Right. And I agree. Those guys, no, I have no issue with value. And even doubling up a wide receiver, while I'm not crazy about it, at least they got value on that second pick. So it's going to be a real interesting summer for them to figure out that wide receiver room, because they got a lot of talent and a lot of draft capital already invested there from the last three drafts now. Four drafts, right? They've been eight wide receivers drafted in the last 4 years, I believe. They might have cut one already, but I'm trying to think of who they have. But I know the Ravens already had six the past 3 years, and then they got two more here this year. Let's see. What else do I have to say about this? They had two cornerback draftees. I thought that was kind of cool, given the age of the cornerback position. In the case of Wade, no problem with value and no problem with doubling up at the position. Because I think also that you know, what we're going to find with Stevens is that he really is a guy who might end up at free safety, might stick at corner. I watched some interesting film today on him that we'll get to talk about.
And DaCosta said flat out, I think, I'll quote, we think he's going to be a really, really good free safety. So, I mean, that really said it all there. But yeah, I watched some of the Stevens stuff. It'll be interesting to get into him. And then Wade, I mean, he definitely has the skills to play, and a good enough tackler to play safety too. So I thought with those two picks, we had guys that had some flexibility. They'll find their way into dime somehow.
Right. Both those guys, yeah, you got four corner dime as a possibility, or three safety dime, and either of them could potentially contribute to either. Let's start with the individual players if we can, and get right to it with Rashad Bateman, the Ravens' first pick, 6'0", 190. Often, you know, questioned, the speed is questioned a little bit, but he's a 4.39 guy. I don't know if I completely trust that time, but I don't see speed as really being an issue for him.
Me neither. And I just went by the general rule of adding a half second to all the times.
You mean 0.05? I hope not 0.5.
Yes. Thank you, Ken. But just to say, okay, if he's a 4.39, all right, well, he's a mid 4.4s. We'll just call it that. So yes, I don't worry about the speed, because what he does best is get open.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really a lot of things to like about what he does. He obviously goes up for the ball very well, not afraid to go after a contested catch. And one of the things I like to see with that is guys who also can catch the ball over the middle of the field in a contested basis. And his heat map's all over the place in terms of where the catches are.
I like the fact that if you line him up by himself on the boundary opposite Hollywood, that he can run that slant, and it has to be respected. Mm-hmm. And they have to play it honest too, because if they miss and it turns into a slant and go,
sluggo,
right? Yeah. He's creative enough to sell that. Really good route salesman. So it's going to give defenses something else to think about. We saw late in the year where they were trying to screen the ball, throw screens to Dez Bryant or get it to mm-hmm. Ricard in the flat. Well, you know, you have somebody. Well, you have two people now. You have Bateman and Sammy Watkins, who can both be relied on for that 3rd and 8, 3rd and 6. They have to respect that.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough to say Julio Jones will not be a Raven after Saturday.
Not unless we're trading Duvernay Duvernay half the wide receiver room, because I mean, we're probably only going to keep six, which puts us at two quarterbacks. So they're going to have to make a decision there. And, you know, really, it's looking like Boykin's going to be the odd man out in Prochet. It's going to be tough to pick six, because you got your three what would you call starters in Watkins, Bateman, and Hollywood, and then you're going to have the two, or then you're going to have Duvernay and the other two guys below him. So it's a logjam.
Yeah, quite a logjam. So they probably keep six. I would think maybe somebody goes to IR, maybe somebody gets traded. We'll see how that goes. But the Ravens don't have a fourth-year receiver, I don't believe. So they have everybody's a three, a two, or a one that they've got on the roster currently. And yeah, that's right. The two guys they drafted in 2018 were like the only two bad picks. It was Lasley and Scott in that draft. So the 2019 and 20 and 21 guys, all six of them are still on the team along with Sammy Watkins. So it will be a very tough room to pare down. One of the things, Rashad Bateman is known for having great hands, and of course we see the highlight videos. Very important to understand, that is also Bateman's big problem, is he's had a lot of drops in college, and I'm hopeful, given the nature of them, they seem to be a lot of concentration drops, a lot of trying to get started after the catch. I'm hoping a lot of that can be corrected. It does not really seem to be hand placement. This is the way it is for a lot of other people, that they kind of get their hands caught in the wrong spot.
Yes, and I was trying to find those to see exactly where the drops were. You know, it's a small sample size of what I have access to. But I think more importantly is that he can catch the ball through contact. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we saw our receivers have problems with, is if a defender's hand's in there at the catch point where they're not coming away, or it's just dropped or they're stripped. And Bateman is very strong through the catch point. And that combined with his body control and his route salesmanship, I mean, it's a great pick. I think what I like most about the pick is that it's a high floor pick. I think he'll be a useful receiver in the NFL. If you put him in any system for any team, he's going to get his. And it gives Lamar a real security blanket. I feel like that's somebody he can trust.
Well, I hope they build that trust quickly, and the drops have to factor into that. He can't be a dropper at the NFL level. And more important than being even a dropper, he can drop the ball occasionally as long as he doesn't tip the ball into interceptions. That's the worst. Not tracking the ball is also good. Not playing to avoid the interception, not being a good defensive player when that's what's the option left to you, is not good. But I'm also going to agree with what you said about some of that trust, because I think given how he is comfortable crossing the field, he'll be a wonderful extended play receiver for Lamar. I presume Hollywood is going to stay on the right side. We'll probably see Bateman mostly on the left side, occasionally in the slot when they have three receivers. And as plays have to develop, time gets created, Bateman's going to be a good guy to get open crossing the field and make himself available to Lamar.
And I think it's interesting that after taking swings at guys who tested out of the water but still had some question marks, that they went for route running in this draft. And Bateman was one of the better route runners in the draft. Maybe not quite on Jerry Jeudy's level from last year, but a lot of salesmanship in what he did. And, you know, because having good feet, quick feet isn't enough if you're telegraphing it and if everything looks the same. But Bateman, it's really hard. I couldn't imagine trying to defend him and figuring out where he's going to go, because he doesn't give any kind of tell until the last moment. Him on those little whip routes, I think you call them, we used to call them jerk routes, where they go right in and go back out to the sideline. You can't tell where he's doing that. We mentioned the sluggos. You can't tell if it's a slant or if it is a slant and go. So I think that Bateman's really going to maybe cause some attention from the safeties to come over his side. Maybe you could speak to how that will affect Hollywood.
I want to speak to Bateman for a second, because
sure,
I want to talk about his ability to release and whatnot. He's definitely a guy who can beat press coverage. And more than that, if you press against Lamar, you do so at your own peril, because he can create all kinds of time and space and create an extended play where you get beat for a big play instead of getting beat for 6, 7, 8 yards. So anyway, I think that's great. But the other thing is, the Ravens have not done much with bunch formations. And in Pittsburgh, Kansas City, a bunch of other teams in the AFC do that. And I would love to see Bateman be part of that, because you don't know where he's going out of that bunch. A lot of, you know, you can play some process of elimination with the receiver type in a bunch formation and try and figure out who's doing what, and this guy's going to, you know, go long, or he'd be vertical, but he's willing to go to the inside if it's a tight end, maybe. With Bateman, I think he could go anywhere off that, and I think that it'll make it easier for the Ravens to scheme bunch with him being in that bunch.
That's a great point. I hadn't thought about that, but I tell you, when we did run some bunch stuff or something similar, we had tight ends out there. I remember we had bunch with Boyle and Andrews, and it's like, well, I wonder who's going to catch the ball. Yes, yeah, it's Duvernay over there. Those other two guys are there to block. So, yeah, if you put receivers like Bateman, that's a great point. He could run any kind of route. A guy we drafted later too, Wallace, has got some tricks up his sleeve. So yes, okay, I like where you're going there with that.
All right, so I'm going, like, if I was grading the first pick, if I was grading Rashad pick from three pluses to three minuses, and I think I kind of want to do this for each of these. In terms of where he was drafted at 27, I'm going to say Bateman is one plus for me.
Out of three?
Out of three. Yeah, but he's not minus. He's a plus pick, but he's not three pluses either.
Okay. Yeah, I would lean more towards two pluses just because he was on my radar as someone we could pick. So when the Ravens go way off of where I'm expecting and somebody I think they could get later, that's when I get into the minus category.
Sure.
But Bateman, if you saw him mocked to the Ravens, or you had seen him mocked to the Ravens, and he's somebody that we were picking, somebody that was expected to go late first, early second, yeah, one or two pluses for me, I would say. Not a home run, but I love it, and it's a guy that could really make a difference in this offense, so.
Okay. Yeah. Excited about that. And, you know, when the pick occurred, I probably was not as excited as I should have been, but both of these picks I've warmed to over the last day or two since they occurred. Or in the case of these two guys, I guess it's been three days now, but let's move on. Odafeyawe, the number two pick, and we're going to try and pronounce his name correctly. One of the most amazing physical talents in this draft, certainly. And I'm just going to toss out a few of the things. 6'5", 257. You know, you guys know how I love arm length. 34.5-inch arms. Now, there's almost no offensive tackles in this class who have those kind of arms. In fact, there's almost no offensive tackles in this class who have the arm length of our cornerback that we drafted in the fifth round. But away at a 4.37 40, my first reaction to all the things, which are all, you know, off the charts athleticism, is this is a pile of crap. And then I saw his pro day tape, and he looks the athlete.
Not an ounce of body fat on him, that's for sure, man. He's built great, and I thought that it spoke to the coaching too, because as I mentioned with the receivers, we went with more polished receivers this year than we had. And we had made some mistakes with, you know, you go all the way back to your Perrymans drafting athletes first, and, you know, that had some, we've had trouble developing receivers. Well, on the other hand, we're showing confidence in our defensive line here by saying, hey, here's a tremendous athlete. Yes, we know he needs work. Let's bring him into the Ravens coaching staff, and we're going to turn him into an absolute monster.
Yeah, I got to love that. And I think that confidence has generally been well earned in how Wink can use a talent. But there have been failures in terms of raw athletic talent. King Surge comes back to mind, Sergio Kindle. You know, they had other guys that they liked that maybe weren't the greatest talents, but they saw something on film that they thought was over the top, like Mount Cody.
Yes.
Same draft. It's not like they haven't had failures on that side of the ball, but they've had more successes than failures, you know, I'd say there as well. Offensive line is really the only point. Well, no, that's not true. We won't get it up. We'll try and judge every position as we go here. Just want to go back to his 40 time for a second at 4:37 and just how extraordinary that is. That's only 0.12 seconds, an eighth of a second slower than the fastest man in the entire draft this year, who was 4:25. Just remarkable.
And even if I use my 0.05 rule, that's still a 4.42. I mean, it's ridiculous.
At defensive, you know, at outside linebacker, yeah.
Yeah, we'll say the front seven. You can even bargain for a defensive end and get that franchise tag money instead of the linebacker money. But, yeah, remarkable. And I think one of the things that I'm hanging my hat on with this pick is that he can play the run. He looked really, really physical. And I went back to 19 just to double check on it, see if I missed it or saw the wrong game or that kind of thing. And I really think that, he can use what length he has to stack and shed. If you put him on a tight end, he's going to dismiss the tight end pretty regularly.
Well, I think we're seeing the same things, I'm sure, because I love his pursuit against the run, and I love who he could be at the NFL level against the run. I'm not sure he's going to be there immediately, but he has all the tools, and the big tool that he has, whether a pass rusher or as a run defender, is that if he can ever figure out how to counter what the other player is doing, every single player he ever faces will overcommit to his first move because they have to. He's so quick, you have to overcommit. So if he's one of these guys who develops a great head fake, it's going to turn into an unbelievable sack production. If he develops a spin move to counter off the outside shoulder immediately, it'll be amazing. If he can do anything as a second inside move off any kind of outside angle, it'd be great. And he needs to really turn his speed on in some other ways I want to talk about. But I think I kind of want to manage expectations for Ravens fans and say there's two categories of things. And the things he does well right now, and there's a bunch of things that he needs to do better to learn about football that are still to come. And I thought we'd maybe discuss that.
Sure. Go ahead. Do you have a question?
You mentioned the run part first. I think he already uses athleticism well to clamp down against the run. He can extend and get his arms out there, and then he's great with pursuit. He uses his speed very well to run down the run. It really makes stretches to his side a very risky proposition.
It really does. And pursuit, it really stands out. I guess his numbers speak for itself on that, but there's an element of hustle that he has in his game too. So, high motor guy. So, you know, I expected to see good things from him when the run went away from him. But towards him, I think he has a certain toughness. And to me, that's half the battle in the run game is willingness. I think we saw that with Yannick when he came here. You know, he wasn't good at it, but he really tried. He really tried to set the edge. And with Away, I think he's a very upright athlete. He can really be strong while he's upright. And bench press his opponent pretty easily. And I think that's going to bode well once he gets in here. I'm not really worried about his run defense. I think that'll translate pretty early. And
I'm on the field early.
Right. And something that you said I just wanted to build off of, when you're talking about, I'm big about special skills. His special skills is his speed around the edge. And it's just like a receiver who has speed. You have to respect that. You don't have to run great stop routes or out routes. He's going to get that because you're forced to play off of him.
Right.
With Suggs, it was the bull rush. You had to be prepared for that bull rush or he was going to put you on your backside. So just put a couple of moves on his plate and, you know, just let him build slowly.
Okay, so I've got, we mentioned his high motor, which was my second thing. I think those are the two things he currently brings. I'm gonna take the devil's advocate position on what you talk about him getting speed to the edge, because I think where he is right now, he does two things. There are two of my points that are just, you can't live with this. One is he's way too slow off the line of scrimmage. He's too slow, and his first move, even in pass rush situations, is sometimes just to stand up, not to hit your opponent. Well, you know, you gotta be doing something. You gotta have some sort of a plan, and that means going to the outside shoulder of your opponent. Well, great. That'll get you the speed you need, or it'll help you get the speed you need. If you want to already have a better plan where you're going to counter or you're going to chop or you're going to do any number of things, you know, the only thing he's really got in terms of pass rush moves right now, I think, is a pretty good rip move.
Yes.
The problem about going around the edge is that he stands so upright, has no bend in his game at all, that he takes an inefficient path to the quarterback. And so we used to say great circle route, but great circle route is actually the most efficient way to get around a globe. In his case, it's something much less efficient than that in terms of trying to get back to the quarterback. It's just, it looks terrible.
And if you remember on the draft show, that was my main concern, was his first step. His first step, it's like, for a guy that runs that fast, who's that explosive, how is his first step that slow? But I really believe, after thinking about it for a couple of days, that that's something the Ravens feel like can easily be fixed. Get him in the right stance, maybe stand him up a little bit more, get him looking at the ball, just basic coaching points to say, hey, look, you got the speed. You need to threaten them with that speed. And then, hey, if you see the tackle overset, come back inside. If he is a little hesitant, go ahead and give him that rip move that you're comfortable with and go around the edge and shorten the corner.
Yeah, so you bring up a great point here, because there's two things going on there. One is he's got to allow his focus to be on other than the man across him. So that's great. And I think the Ravens can teach him that and help him gain some in terms of how do I look at my opponent? How do I look at the football first to get off quicker? And then how do I look at my opponent in order to make the proper first move on him? The problem is there's a whole lot of processing speed that goes along with that that people like Lamar Jackson have, and I don't think you can coach it very easily at the NFL level. I think that you teach people who know how to use leverage against an opposing player. They've been doing it all their life. They've been playing on basketball since they were four. They've been playing football since in Pee Wee leagues, and they know exactly how the other guy's going to move based on his step. And I was, we talked about this, I think, a little bit on draft night. Anytime you hear Lamar Jackson talk about any topic, it's a very great, very good party line. I mean, he's a very likable character, period. But when he talks about leverage, all of a sudden he's talking at the Einstein level about exactly the things he's looking for, and it gives you all the confidence in the world. That's what one thing Away's really going to have to figure out is leverage. He doesn't have to learn at the Lamar Jackson level, though. He's such a great athlete. He can make offensive tackles look foolish just by making them overcommit to his first move. So it's like bet first in poker usually wins. First bet wins.
That's right. It's true. I think there's some parts of this game, as much as we analyze it, you just can't coach, man. I mean, Lamar has that. Some running backs have that. You can ask some of them and they don't even know. What did you do? Yeah. I don't know. I just kind of saw him do this and I decided to do that. Well, do you look for that every time? No, that was the first time I saw him do that. But with Away, it's something that I've seen with wrestlers, and I have a lot of experience wrestling, is if you can get them to key on one aspect, maybe they're just focusing in on the left hip with the left tackle, or, and I'm not as knowledgeable about offensive line or defensive end play, but if maybe there's one body part or one specific thing that the coaches can get him to key on, if he does this, A, if he does that, B, just do that. Don't worry about anything else. And then, hey, he's going to get lucky a couple of times, too. Because people are going to panic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing. If he bets first, the other player is going to overbet. So it's kind of like bet half and then move the other way. Jalen Phillips, very polished NFL pass rusher, had that incredible head fake ability, or has it already. He's been concussed. He's injury concerns, but he has unbelievable, Jason Taylor level head fake ability to get past people. I mean, I see it, and Owe is obviously does not have that yet, but there's no reason on earth why he couldn't develop a first step, which creates all kinds of problems for tackles trying to figure out whether they need to defend outside or inside.
Right, and some of these guys, they need a lot of moves because, quite frankly, they're not Adafi Owe athletically. Mm-hmm. So Owe is one of those guys that, hey, I can, my crossover can get good, or, my stutter step drive-by can get good, and that's enough to get me by. But overall, the pick makes me nervous, but I'm glad the Ravens are confident in themselves that they can get the best out of Adafi.
I got one more. All of these things as a pass rusher, and I don't doubt that he's going to start on the rush side because they're going to start Bowser on the Sam side. So it makes sense that, he'd be in there at least for early downs, probably used in some way on a passing down that might be different. But the big thing the Ravens have got to hope for looking at him, I mean, screams out coverage outside linebacker as well as pass rush. Now, he may become too good a pass rusher to make that be where you want to use him a lot, but Judon was a good pass rusher too, and they still used him in coverage effectively, and it allowed them to have a very versatile scheme that Wink enjoys now. I think they love that idea. I think they also loved it in their other draft pick in terms of what's the best thing we can get out of Hayes was maybe we got another Sam in here too.
Yeah, Hayes looks like a Sam all day to me, but Away, I definitely think rush end is going to be his primary spot with McPhee, and maybe you see him at Sam a little bit. Maybe we go with McPhee and on one side and Away at Sam to give a little physicality on both sides. So it'll be interesting to see how we mix it up with Away and not put too much on his plate, but still let his athleticism affect the game.
Right. You know what? I'd be okay if every single snap he took this year was on a naked offensive tackle. Be okay if they just automatically try to line it up that way. When I say a second Sam, I'm really talking about on passing downs, it gives you that flexibility for him to drop, and that's still to be a reasonable alternative there. And I think he's clearly got some of that. You know, for all of the things he's not doing yet, he still was a Big Ten defensive lineman of the year, or whatever award he won.
Yeah, he commands respect. And I think he will at the NFL level, too. So I wasn't thrilled with the pick. I guess we're going to grade soon. But
go ahead.
You know, I'm going to be critical on this one and give it a minus one because for this reason, I really thought that, and DaCosta said the phone was ringing. If you look at that draft anywhere from 38 to even 45, 50, we could have gotten two players for the price of OA. We could have fixed the edge. We could have addressed offensive tackle. There was a lot of things that we could have did with those two picks. So I want to say the pick, the player is good. He has room to grow. But I would have liked to seen us do a little something different than stick that 31.
Okay, enormous high ceiling player, and I had some of the same feelings you did about it. Either I was good at drafting Jenkins at 31, I would always so be good trading back and getting two players that we liked, which would have been, you know, somewhere in the 50 and 75 range would have been where those players would have come. Made a lot of sense. Would have made, you know, day two really interesting, certainly for covering it there. But I also like the fact that they got away and they got a very, very high ceiling player. So this is not a high floor guy. He could bomb out, but I like him so much in terms of what the ceiling is. I'd call this probably a zero at that point. Not it's not a plus pick. It's not a minus pick. I like it. It's an O, not a zero.
Okay, so zero is the option for our grading then. Okay.
Yeah, zero's an option.
I got you.
Do you want to make it a zero? Do you want to change?
You know what? I tend to agree just because it's the upside and the floor are just, like you said, they even each other out well. But I do think, I would give it a higher grade because I think that he can bring something right away, if not for the players that were picked behind him that I really liked. So
the economics of the draft pick definitely play into this, and I'm going to get on the Ravens for that, some of that on the later picks. But let's keep moving here because this is going great, but we're 34 minutes in. The third pick. Probably my favorite Ravens draft pick of the draft, Ben Cleveland, the guard from Georgia.
Love him. I mean, he fits us. He seems to fit us really well in our style because he can pass protect. I think that he gives you guard flexibility. You can put him at either spot if you really wanted to. He can execute all those blocks. And, you know, it's tempting to say he's going to play at right tackle, but at least give it a right tackle a shot. But why? I mean, this young man's going to be an upgrade on the interior from day one. So a great pick for the Ravens. It really kind of solves the mystery of how we're going to arrange the inside of that line. You're going to have probably Bozeman at center and then Zeitler and Cleveland at the guards. Upgraded set. You know, that was a position that hurt us in the playoffs. And now we have two new players in there.
A lot of things to say about Ben Cleveland, but I'm going to start with him replacing Bozeman at left guard. And people who follow my work in the offensive line know that I'm very positive on Bozeman, both as a puller and an overall guard, much better than you'll see in the PFF scores, for example. He gets a lot of very high value blocks. The Ravens ask a lot of him in their pulling scheme. Here's the thing. He'll move to center and he'll still pull a lot because the Ravens pull left tackle center a fair amount, not just left tackle, left guard when they counter. So you've got still usage for him over there. But Cleveland impresses me. He's so far above Bozeman as an athlete. And you know I love Bozeman, but he's so far above Bozeman as an athlete in every respect, whether it's speed, quickness, agility. You know, I guess one thing I would point to that maybe he's not as learned about right now would be in terms of processing while pulling. There might be differences there. But to me, Ben Cleveland is just ridiculously advanced as an athlete. If you think he can't pull, then there's no reason to believe Bozeman could pull because he's a 5'46 6'6 guy coming out of school. Ben Cleveland is at 5'01 or 5'05, sorry. So 0.4 of a second difference in 40 time. You look at all the others, the shorter times are better. The shuttle, the three cone, all better than what Bradley did. So it's that's no knock on Bradley because he's made himself extremely useful as a level two blocker. Cleveland brings a lot more to the position.
Well, I'll not defend Bozeman, but one thing I will say is that he's got the brain for it, the processing. Even if he's not the fastest or Cleveland's faster, one thing you know about Bradley is he's going to find his guy and be able to adjust at the last second. And I suspect that that's not going to be too hard for Cleveland because, you know, he's going to get there. He's going to get there quickly. But yes, and to address something else you said, I mean, Greg Roman, if there's one offensive coordinator that has a variety of different runs, I'm sure he's got plays in there where he's going to pull the center. You know, we've seen him already.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So if he wants to go to that more that style, I'm sure he can with no problem. But one thing I think is going to be an upgrade for having Cleveland over Bozeman is that, you know, I'd say about maybe 2-3 times a game, Ken, maybe you agree or disagree, you'll see Bozeman get absolutely crossed up, off balance, and just barely holding on in pass protection.
Yeah.
And that's something that Cleveland, I didn't see one time, man. I mean,
he's a very advanced pass blocker. Let me address that if I can. So with Bozeman, the other teams were really making an effort to hit the left A gap with stunt traffic, even the left B gap when Stanley's there. I thought Bozeman really improved in this last year. One of his big areas of improvement was trying to pass off, but he's not the quickest at doing it. What I noticed on tape with Cleveland, and this is really cool because it could be an indicator of processing speed, but at least it's an indicator of being coached extremely well. In Georgia's scheme, he was on a double team on the inside with the center usually. And I saw some film of him playing right guard doing this and also playing left guard doing this. So he had his hand on the center's block. And so they have a double team, and he starts off with two hands on that double team. Then he moves to one hand, and immediately his head's on a swivel looking to either to the tackle side to adjudicate, first of all, is anyone coming from level two? Second of all, does my left tackle need help? That is what Marshall Yanda did to protect James Hurst while he was starting those first seven games at right tackle before Orlando Brown was deemed ready in 2018. It's next level stuff. A guy who can do that, who understands exactly what's going on, who can process what's going on like that, he's going to make us very happy as a left guard.
You explained that really well. That painted a picture, and yes, he does that. And I think a lot of it has to do with trust in his ability that if the tackle's struggling, I can get over there and make a difference. Yeah. You know, it's kind of going above and beyond, but
it's called we call it looking for work. It's a terrific thing. And you know, you don't have to look for work always on a guy who's coming from level two. Sometimes you don't have an assignment. But when you don't have an assignment, go pancake the guys next to you, guy.
I mean, that's, right.
You know, sometimes you actually don't help with that kind of a block. I mean, oftentimes a chip block from a running back or a tight end more often can actually hurt the tackle in terms of keeping hold of his man.
Been thinking about McDonald's all day. Can't get it off my mind. I can already taste it. Ooh, got my mind on my mouth and my mouth ready for some Mickey D's deal.
There's a deal for every moment at McDonald's.
Right now, get two of your favorites for just $3.50. Mix and match a classic McChicken, a hot and spicy McChicken, or a juicy McDouble. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Get really into your favorite shows and movies all in one place with Flex, a 4K streaming box you get free with Xfinity Internet. Find what you want with your voice on Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and more. No more jumping in and out of apps. And get Peacock Premium at no additional cost. It's a way better way to watch. Learn more at Xfinity.com/Flex. Restrictions apply. Requires postpaid Xfinity Internet excluding Internet Essentials. One device included. Subscriptions required to access streaming services.
But boy, if Ben Cleveland hits anyone, that guy's going down.
I was going to say, a lot of times, you know, these a looking for work guy will do exactly what you said. It's like, your teammate has him handled. Basically, you just freed the defender by chipping on him, and, you know, almost like cheap shot mode. You know, if you're going to do it, do it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. He's a good finisher. I think he could be an even better finisher than he is right now, but he's a good finisher now, and I think we're going to see a very nasty lineman at the next level. And I think he will be coached right away to say, hey, look, if you're going to hit the guy, knock him all the way to the ground. Don't make it more difficult for the left tackle to man the edge because you just chipped a little bit on the guy.
Right. Don't hit your own man either.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good one. But, you know, it's funny because edge rushers complain all the time about 225-pound running backs hitting them in the ribs. They're going to have a whole different type of complaint about right. this. It really ought to be interesting. But also more interesting or potentially more helpful because that tackle is almost always close to where that guard center double is in the Ravens system because people don't get out of their lanes rushing Lamar Jackson. You can't afford to take a speed route. So guess what?
Yeah, it's kind of like that press man coverage you were talking about. Another reason you don't want to do it. Yeah. You don't want to be running with your back turned because Lamar might be running right behind you.
There you go. Okay. Hey, what else do you have to say about Cleveland?
Nothing. I like the pick. You know, when we did our interior O-line show, I liked them then. I thought 94 was – I figured one of those guys was going to slip to around that spot. Ended up being Ben Cleveland, and I couldn't be happier. I think this is a great value for the Ravens. I think they got a guy who could have went in round two near the end of round three. And this would be a three-star. If I had to give three stars to any pick, it would be this one.
I'm with you. Three pluses on this one with Ben Cleveland. He will turn 23 in August. I don't really consider that the same kind of problem for an offensive lineman it is for, say, a edge rusher or a free safety or a cornerback. That would be a big one. But it is a guy who might be more limited in terms of second contract value. But as far as he is NFL ready, he should be starting the very first game of 2021. If he isn't, I'll really have questions about why not.
And Ken, you talk about value second contract. He is an offensive lineman for the Ravens. So if Lamar is healthy and doing his thing, he's going to be worth something come contract time, whether we keep him or let him go.
There you go. Okay, let's move on. Brandon Stevens, a little bit of a surprising pick. End of round three, they took him at, 105, 106?
It was 104, actually.
104, there you go. Free safety cornerback out of SMU, 6'1", 213, 444, 40. I have watched some film of him over the last couple of days. That's the first I've seen of him. How about you?
I saw him once and just, it was my fault. I dismissed him. I was looking elsewhere, and then I watched Deontay Smith a couple of times. So I'd seen the East Carolina game that he had against SMU, and he didn't stand out too much. He broke up a couple of passes, which was nice, but it wasn't a guy who had his name called a lot. And I only have access to two games. They subbed him in and out. It was kind of wild. I don't know if you noticed that. It was kind of a line change where they just brought in a whole new group of defensive backs and he's in there and I'm looking for him. I'm like, wait a minute. And I love it when players wear a pair of socks or gloves that I can easily tell the red shoes or something. Yes. It's like, he just looked like regular guy. It was like, where's 23. But, you look at the 4.44, the 38 inch vert and 10 broad backs up the 40 time. So, the explosiveness is there for him. And DaCosta said, we think he's going to be a really, really good free safety. When I saw him, he was in press coverage. So I think he gives us that flexibility, too.
All right. So I've got some comments to make about it. The game I watched in detail was the Tulsa game. And I saw some of what you saw initially. And by the way, SMU had a 21-0 lead in that game. And they choked it up and lost 27-24, I think. But it was the week before they also... Tulsa beat Tulane when I was watching two of Tulane's edge rushers, Patrick Johnson and Cam Sample. All right. And both of those games, Zaven Collins ended up winning the game by making interception, 96 yard touchdown, return for a touchdown, interception to end this game against SMU. Let's talk a little bit, though, about what Stevens did in that game. In the first half, he did actually leave the field a few times, which is very odd to me. SMU really has a fucked up defensive system, just in the simplest possible terms. They do so much substitution in the secondary that they had him changing positions on a buy down basis to go from free safety to corner. So he has very verifiable versatility at that in-game change, you know, thing. They didn't ever play him at free safety because it was an emergency necessarily. They played him at free safety or cornerback because they thought that was the best place he could help the team on that down. And, yeah. I've never seen that before.
He was hard to find. He was really hard to find, Ken. Like, maybe that's why he was off my radar, because I saw the RAS numbers, but I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute, now I watched SMU at least three times. I haven't seen this guy. Like, who is he? You know, I had to wait. Okay, Stevens broke up the pass. Nice play. You know, give him his credit. But I had never seen that where they're pulling defensive backs off the field, and then Stevens would go from corner to safety. Mm-hmm. But I think his experience at corner will help him. Maybe he's a guy that we ask to cover a tight end or a big slot. I mean, he's got decent size, so.
Yeah. Yeah, he's absolutely used for that in this game. I mean, he played slot corner, he played outside corner, and he played free safety. So you can't bat for the cycle more than that at defensive back. And again, I guess he can play a strong safety too. But a few things about him here. First of all, SMU had three illegal substitution fouls in one game because they couldn't get their defense on the field. Not their offense. They didn't do something wrong there, have a 12th man hideout play, whatever it might be. They couldn't get their defense on the field properly. So this particular scheme was not working for them in terms of the mistakes they made. And I think maybe it'll be a little bit easier for Stevens when the Ravens figure out that one position he's going to play. I don't think he looked great in coverage on what I look at. He plays very soft when he plays on the outside. Seems to really want to respect speed of the opponent more than break to make a play on the ball. He is a good tackler. He also missed a run tackle that was pretty bad in that game.
Yes, I would say that if you want to see him at his best in coverage, watch the Memphis game. YouTube, the Memphis game. He makes a couple of plays on a wide receiver named Moxie, who the announcers were raving about. And in that game, too, Ken, I noticed wild with the tackle angles, man. Like, he comes flying in there and misses. Like, he overcommits in run defense. So that's something that's got to be cleaned up.
Well, it's good. I mean, they must really like him in terms of his free safety skill set, his ball skills and whatnot, to believe that he'll end up there. Obviously, a part of it is just having a little bit of a gambling mentality, which I don't know that I really saw at outside corner for him. You know, he certainly wasn't Marcus Peters in terms of, I'm going to make a pick six and I'm not going to worry if I get beat. He was a soft coverage guy, an off coverage guy in this game. And, there was nothing from that game that screamed out, this guy needs to be drafted in the third round. And frankly, the Ravens had to figure somebody was sniffing around, or I don't see how they saw the value in this pick. I mean, it's not a matter of he's a bad player. It's a matter of you could have had him in round five.
Exactly. And there was another player on the board, Caden Stearns, that I really liked, which is why I'm going to be critical of this pick of Stevens as a free safety. And I'm going to give it a minus two. I'm going to give it a minus two just because you had at least one other player out there who has experience at free safety. There's a lot of unknown with Stevens. I will say on his off coverage and his favor, his break was really nice. The way that once he put his foot in the ground and broke on the ball, it was really noticeably quick. So, I hate to use the word reach because we don't know what other teams are thinking about the guy. Maybe they kept hearing his name come up and thought a team liked him in particular that was picking. But I thought that there were two options left at safety, a true free safety, if they considered him one. So I just haven't seen enough. This is either an incomplete grade or a minus two, depending on how I want to look at it.
Okay, I go along with minus two. I think that you know, obviously the Ravens love him, and that's enough for me on most picks. But I just don't think the economy of the pick was there, and they had other guys they could have taken at the I guess it was fourth round at that. No, it was a third round, right? It was a day two pick.
Yep, it was the comp pick.
Yeah. So there's certainly other players that they could have had at that point that would have been interesting. All right, let's move on. The fourth round pick, and, you know, obviously we're looking, starting the day here, and we're thinking, boy, that'd be good if they pick a offensive tackle or a defensive lineman to finally address, you know, these things that they haven't addressed in this draft. They went out and they get another wide receiver, Tylan Wallace of Oklahoma State. A guy of normal build, 5'11 and a half, 194, certainly not big for a wide receiver. 450, 40 is not going to scare a lot of defensive backs. What do you have to say about him?
What I have to say is that I think his height is deceiving compared to how he plays. His body control and ability to time the ball and high point the ball is very good. You know, I think that he's going to be a decent route runner at least. Fearless player. You talk about those slants over the middle. Mm-hmm. He will take it, catch it, take the punishment, bounce off somebody if he has to. So I really love the toughness in Wallace. I think that he'll be able to block in our run scheme. Obviously, Boykin's on another level when it comes to blocking at second level and third level. But I think that I like this pick a lot just because it screamed BPA. I had Wallace ranked, I think, number 69 on my board, and here he was at 131. So, you know, I love the pick.
He's been remarkably consistent in terms of his yards per target. Now, yards per target, most important stat if you just can only have one for receiver. Now, let me be clear about that. That's the most important statistic as opposed to a metric or a trait. I'm talking about looking at his actual production. Look at yards per target is what I always say. So he had 10.0 yards per target in college, and his last three seasons, 10.0, 10.3, 10.0. So it doesn't get much more productive than that. Just by comparison purposes, there have only been two wide receivers in Ravens history who've ever had a single season of 10.0 or better yards per target. So that's really outstanding. I thought he's a great value pick, and I'm with you on a lot of the contested catch things. That he is very fearless. He plays high. Reminds me of the other side of Diami Brown. Diami Brown, definitely a pure left side vertical receiver. Tylan Wallace makes a lot of his money on verticals on the right side. So one question comes up is, how does he fit with Hollywood in terms of being on that right side?
Well, we saw Hollywood on the left side a few times running dig routes, and it was pretty successful. If I remember, we had some success with those plays. But maybe that is Oklahoma State wanting him there. Maybe he's more comfortable there. So that's the big question with it, is can he play on the left side? But I think that if he is comfortable playing on the left side, he'll give us what we expected at Boykin at the very least. Like, you don't have to be a 4-4 guy to win on the deep ball. This guy does it a little differently. He's really strong at the top of the route. He's got all the push-off moves, the last second, the really crafty at the top of his route to give him that last second separation. And then, like I said, the body control where he can go up, twist, turn, angle himself, you know, and make an acrobatic-type catch and keep his feet in bounds. So it'll be interesting to see whether if they get him on the field, they say, hey, we know he's comfortable on the right side. Let's try Hollywood on the left side, or maybe he subs in for Hollywood. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think the two touchdowns Hollywood had in the Miami game, which were, I think, on his first two passes Lamar threw to him in 2019, were both left side. One was kind of a slant route that he took off on. The other one was a deep route that I believe was on the left side. I could be wrong about that. But I have to think back. I've got to watch that game again now and really see.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. the slant route. He was definitely on the left.
Yeah,
but I'm trying to think of the deep ball. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we'll confirm that one way or the other. But I think we've seen certainly a lot more production from Brown over the last couple of years on that right side as opposed to the left. So we've seen Boykin mostly lined up on the left side.
And what do you think about this, Ken? If you have, like, Hollywood is lined up on the right in the quarterback's vision because he's just clearly been the best receiver on the team. Mm-hmm. What if this draft changes that and they say, hey, we have a diverse guy like Bateman, mm-hmm. can run a bunch of routes. We have Wallace, who's comfortable on the right side. What if Hollywood becomes our X receiver? It's a long shot, but you know, if you have two guys that can do what he did, maybe he was on the right side because, I mean, his skill set though screams Z receiver. But man, I could see him on some right side cornerbacks, and just tearing them up, man. Like,
right. I'm a big fan of respecting the receiver's dominant catching shoulder. So if the receiver likes to catch the ball off his right shoulder, off his left shoulder, you put him on the appropriate side for it. And I heard Chris Carter talking about this once, and he's like, you know, I always like, and I forget which shoulder it was for him, whether it was left or right, but he goes, you know, if the ball comes over my, I think it might have been my left shoulder, I just turn my body all the way to catch it, which really limits yak potential, by the way, when you do that. So he, you know, he's turning 180 degrees or, you know, maybe 200 degrees to catch the football. Whereas, you know, if you catch it over the shoulder, you catch it in stride and you're gone. You can make a house call from there pretty easily, or some of the time, let's say pretty easily. But I'm a big believer in respecting the shoulder that the receiver likes to catch the ball. And so I'd like them to try and scheme around that if they can. And it all breaks down on extended plays. It may not help as much to have that dominant shoulder side that you start on.
And you bring up, you pop something into my head, and that's the back shoulder throw. Something that Wallace and Bateman have both shown that they have a knack for. And we haven't seen Lamar throw those. So I want to see if that's something that has to do with the receivers or if it's something that Lamar's not comfortable with, because he'll have an opportunity to throw some with these two guys.
Yeah, I mean, if you can generate a lot of off coverage, then you can certainly do that. Hopefully you don't put yourself in a position where it's easier and there's help over the top in zone coverage that might create some interceptable balls that way. Flacco obviously, you know, could throw a, whatever you thought about Joe Flacco, he could throw a snowball through a blast furnace without getting it soggy, to steal directly from Bill James. he threw that out route like nobody else in terms of the velocity, and that really put him in a great position for that to be a big weapon. It made Mason a better receiver than he was for years after. He was in decline. So I don't know if it's going to work the same way. I kind of think that still schematically the Ravens are not at their best if they're throwing short to the outside.
Yeah, overall, though, you know, since we spent a lot of time on the offensive picks here so far, it gives Roman a lot of flexibility into how he wants to attack this. And it's going to be really, really interesting to see what kind of personnel groups he does. They all do something different. You know, you pick the personnel. Like, we can throw pretty much anything at you now. So it's going to be really interesting. I can't wait for the preseason, actually. I want to see what these guys can do and how they're being used.
Yeah, if they throw out 10 personnel, say, or something, that'd be pretty cool if they did that with their wide receiver set now.
Right. And imagine, I'm sorry, I just wanted to say, imagine Lamar's threat of scrambling in the 10 personnel. Oh, my goodness.
That'd be fun. All right, let's move on here. We actually need to hurry this up a little bit. But Sean Wade, the cornerback from Ohio State, is their next pick. 6 feet, 1.5 inch, 192, 4.46 projected 40. I've seen that time for him. Here's the thing that I love about Sean Wade. 33.5 inch arms at cornerback. Don't tell me arm length doesn't matter at cornerback. It's, you block out the sun with those arms. And at 33.5 inches, he's got arm length that offensive tackles in this draft are very jealous of. Adrian Ealy, he didn't get drafted because he's got 33-inch arms. Liam Eichenberg is 1 1/8 inches shorter and would love, I mean, he could be an all-pro or be a pro bowler if he could play at 33.5 inches at left tackle. But Sean Wade has outrageous length and, was what would have been a much higher drafted corner a year ago.
So you're saying there's a chance he could be effective in press coverage. 33.5 inch arms is pretty freaky for his size.
Yeah, I mean, the press coverage is one place it helps, but you just have a much bigger deflection radius than everybody else with that kind of arm length.
No, I hear that. I hadn't thought about, I don't associate arm length to corners and that much. So, yeah, I mean, that would help at the catch point. But this, you know, I'm going to give, if I have to give 3 stars to a pick, I'm going to give it to Sean Wade. And the reason is it's a high upside, a big swing. You're talking a really talented guy who could have went in the first round last year, especially how value cornerbacks are. So if you can get a talent like that in the 5th round, if he busts out, so what? Like, he could turn into one of the better corners in the league. And I found it interesting that all this information came out about the players after they were drafted, all this medical stuff that was being hidden. So he battled turf toe. He had all these deaths. He had 3 deaths in the families with poor guy. I mean, he really, really went through it and continued to battle. and struggled down the stretch in big games, and he dropped way off the board with some teams.
Yeah, so I want to address that specifically. So it's 2020 versus 2019. So I want to go to the stats in a second, but I heard the same tape you did, I think, because it was the Ravens interviewing him after he was picked kind of thing. And he did mention a lot of things that went wrong in my life. My first thing is, boy, I don't want to hear a lot of excuses. But the thing that turned me around on it was that he said, you know, so I got involved with a group called Cleats on the Ground to try and address those issues. So if he didn't have any answer, and Sergio Kendall was kind of like this, lots of excuses, you know, never good reasons for things. There are other players who were in this category too. You know, but they're not doing anything about it. This guy at least did something about it and said, you know, I'm gonna try and fix my life on my own outside of football. And you know, the cleats on the ground seem to be a good way to do that. But 2020, he allowed 9.2 yards per target. You will not get drafted in the NFL allowing 9.2 yards per target. That's terrible. 118.4 passer rating against. And this is what's really bad. An 18.4% target share on the outside. So it means when Ohio State had him on the outside, for the snaps he was in coverage, they threw the ball at him 18.4% of the time.
Right.
If you're in the slot, maybe. No way on the outside.
Yeah, I tell you, it's a tale of two tapes because 2019, man, I had to go back to see what he looked like when he was at the top of his game. And it was lockdown, man. It was lockdown city. And, you know, and I saw him get bullied a little bit, for lack of a better term. I saw him get blocked out of bounds. I've seen him, you know, just kind of, for lack of a better word, out physicaled. So the turf toe, when I heard about the turf toe, that kind of made a little bit of sense from a balance standpoint. Like, man, this guy can't really plant. He doesn't have his feet. But I think the Ravens respect the fact that he tried to play through all of it when he could have easily mic dropped after the 2019 season and said, you know what, forget it. I'm going to get drafted in the first round. Let me rest up. Let me go through all this. He wanted to play, and it hurt him. You know, it cost him probably literally millions of dollars.
Yeah.
So the Ravens are taking a chance, but in the fifth round, I love it. Big swing.
Yeah, it's a big swing. And just to go back to 2019 stat wise, let me make sure I have this right up lined up here. Yeah, 2019, 5.4 yards per target versus 9.2, 70 passer rating against. That's perfectly fine. In fact, it's excellent. 118 in 2020, and a 16.6% target share, which doesn't seem like a lot less, except he was playing in the slot. So you get more targets in the slot, of course. Maybe that's not an of course, but you do get more targets in the slot.
Sure.
So having a higher percentage is not a higher share there is not bad. I think he's a very obvious slot corner backup to Tavon Young, and I think he's the heir apparent after 2021 if Young doesn't step forward with a big year.
So what would you grade it, Ken? Do you like it because of the upside, or is it make you nervous?
I love it. No, I love it. First of all, it's an end of the...
Right.
It's a fifth-round pick. It's a
fifth-round pick.
Yeah, there's no downside. I love the pick entirely, unabashedly. I probably, just because of how he played in 2020, I can only give it two pluses as opposed to three. But there's nothing about the value of the pick that I don't love, or the potential upside that I don't love. So it's a fifth-round pick, and it's, you know, getting third-round value for a fifth-round pick kind of thing.
Love it. Love it.
All right, so let's move on. Dalen Hayes, the outside linebacker from Notre Dame. He's got outside linebacker size at 6'3", 253. Pretty average athlete.
Average athlete, but there's a lot that screams to me that he fits in the system. First of all, I noticed I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
First of all, negative, he needs to diversify his pass rush or have some kind of plan or something, because that's not there. But he seems like a perfect guy. Like, if you want to take Bowser off the field, or if Bowser has to miss a couple of games, the perfect guy. Like, most of his highlights, if you just YouTube his highlights and you want to see what he's all about, it's a lot of coverage, a lot of PBUs in coverage. And then it seems like he was standing up every play that I saw him. I very rarely saw him with his hand in the dirt. So here's a guy that can come right in, play on the strong side, drop in coverage, not give you too much with the rush. But, you know, there's a lot to like, I think, as far as how he fits in the defense.
Yeah, I think they won't have any shame playing him on the other side either if they don't want to weigh in for that down. But he would make a lot of sense to be a second able to drop linebacker. So when we talk, when I talk Sam linebackers anyway, I'm saying he's a guy who can drop to cover on a passing down and not get you hurt. And I think he's there. And I think you're right. You know, if you're talking about taking some early down load from Bowser, I think that could make sense also. I think there's other people who could do it as well, but I think he would make a lot of sense for that that role.
He's kind of strong for his size. I feel like he's a good comp, like a poor man Zaven Collins. Like, you know, he doesn't look like he'd be able to set the edge. I have him 6'3", 253. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he plays a little stronger than that. But yeah, when I think about that Sam linebacker, I'm thinking you have to be able to drop in coverage. And, I mean, like, some of these are exactly the same coverage duties that the Ravens are going to ask him. Dropping kind of at a 45-degree angle to take away the slant. Like, he's doing that consistently through the game. It's not just once or twice. You don't have to look hard to find it.
Yeah, I agree. And that is exactly what the Ravens asked for them to do. If you think back to the very first game of last year, the Ravens dropped Campbell off the defensive line and had him horizontally move to cut off that slant route. He tipped it. Humphrey intercepted it. Remember, Campbell's all pissed off. He didn't get the interception. And of course, it happened right behind him. But, you know, very first series of the year, you see that. But that's how the Ravens create difficulties. I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers are known for exchanging coverage, and the Ravens occasionally do that, but it's actually fairly rare. The Ravens really try and beat you with lateral underneath movement when they drop a defensive lineman. They've had some very good success over the years, you know, creating some interceptions doing just that.
Exactly. And I could see him, Dalen Hayes, fitting in into the race car right away, Ken. Like, he'll give you, like, you don't need to have a pass rush plan to, like, blitz through the A gap. So you say, hey, you know, you can either have him, you know, blitz through, get skinny through the hole, or drop into coverage. And he's one of those guys that you could trust to drop. So where's that coming from, you know?
So if Judon did that last year, I'm sorry, let me be careful what I'm talking about here. The standing race car package outside linebacker, which they had used a fair amount. They didn't always line up five guys up front. It was often one defensive tackle, so often Campbell. It was Wolf sometimes too, along with four outside linebackers. But the fourth outside linebacker did not always line up on the line of scrimmage. They did that a fair amount, where they had two edge guys, two inside guys, usually Ferguson and McPhee. But they also had a lot with Judon as a standing inside linebacker. I love that spot for away. I love it for away. The quickness he's got, the fact that he doesn't have the really good bend already built. I mean, he's perfect for that sort of thing. I'm sure Bowser will be the guy who'll do it a lot this year. And, you know, you're really just showing a different pass rusher. But imagine, you know, Patrick Queen and away standing up on third down. I mean, that's a lot of speed to have to deal with.
Well, I know Patrick Queen can get skinny through the hole. That's one of the things he does best is blitz. Mm-hmm. So I think there is a little bit of skill involved in it. It's not just like who's the quickest, but yeah, man, that I could see that too. Adafi away up the middle. Where are you going to go? You can't really run away from him.
So I'll give you my downside on Dalen Hayes is that I think he has a limited upside in terms of strength at the pro level. And you nailed it because you said he's already got pretty good strength for this level. That's the problem in a sense. He's mm-hmm. going to be 23 in 2 weeks. He's already supposed to have grown man strength. So while other players like Away, we should see a build up in terms of strength or in terms of many other drafted players, Cleveland be the one exception where I think he doesn't need to get any stronger. But a lot of the other guys do need to, and we can expect them to. And in the case of Hayes, I'm not expecting a big pro upside in terms of strength.
Yeah, so that's why I'm going to give this a one rating in the positive. I think for insurance policy, very good move. But unlike Wade, the upside is going to be limited. He's not going to turn into a pass rusher by the time he leaves the building. He is a Collegiate Man of the Year, the Ward finalist, so he has that character, his off the field stuff. So he's kind of like a Ravens type of player in that, you know, they're very big on character.
Yeah. In fact, that was also true, by the way, of Stevens, that he got some specific award to wear the same number as the first African-American player in the Southwest Conference did. And every year, SMU gives one player the right to wear number 23. And he earned it for this season. That's kind of a cool thing to have on his resume.
And Ken, you know, sorry to interrupt, but that was a theme almost with every pick. Like, mm-hmm. you know, of course, the players or coaches talk up their players. But when you see character and team captain through multiple sources, multiple scouting reports, they don't do that for every player. You know what I mean? Like, they're kind of selective on who they say high character guy. And each one of these guys had glowing reports about their leadership and self-motivators, that kind of thing.
It's good to hear, certainly. I did have one other point about Dalen Hayes is that I thought, you know, he, like a lot of other guys the Ravens have had in the past, has really excellent ball skills that aren't just a matter of ball skills playing the pass. He had 4 forced fumbles, 5 fumble recoveries, 4 passes defensed. And you can see most of his passes defensed on the highlights that are out there of him. But one turned into an interception of his own. Every interception is a pass defense for the player. But another turned into an interception for a teammate. And I love to see that. A guy who really knows how to play tip drill PDU as opposed to just our PBU, as opposed to just knocking the ball down.
I love it. Like I said, safe pick, I think, you know, a role player. And if we can't get a Justin Houston or somebody else in here, it kind of gives us a little peace of mind. At least he can contribute in coverage.
Should be part of any 6-to-make-5, 5-to-make-4 kind of outside linebacker set that the Ravens will have. I think he will get some activations. I think the Ravens expect him to play some special teams. He's a 0 for me in terms of +3 to -3 scale, but I don't hate the pick. So the next pick I didn't like, Ben Mason, a fullback, 6'3", 246, a 4.77 40. He has, you know, obviously a lot of people like Tommy Tremble out of this draft in terms of a guy who could kind of do it all as a Swiss Army knife. And I think that was really more true of Tremble than it is of Mason. Mason is really more of a traditional fullback, no pedigree as a receiver at all in college.
Well, I tell you, Ken, you kind of stole my thunder there because we didn't talk about this before the show. But if you were going to draft another player in this mold, why not go ahead and get Tommy Tremble, who can do what Mason can do, but also has a lot of upside. He's got a lot of room to grow as a traditional tight end receiver because he wasn't used that way. Ben Mason is not going to be that guy. He actually I saw a lot of carries for him when I watched, and he took care of the ball. So maybe. You know, like my first note here on Ben Mason is Ricard is a free agent. That's the first thing I wrote down, and it's got to be a move to hedge their bets on the future.
So when did Tommy Tremble get drafted? What number? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't know offhand, but I know that we passed on him. Are you looking it up?
I'll look it up. It'll just take me a second here. So
yeah, I want to say like middle of the fourth, though.
Well, if he... No, it's third round, 83. So the Ravens had no chance to get him.
Okay. All right.
No realistic chance.
I take that back then. We got Ben Cleveland. We're glad Tommy Tremble was taken before him. So, I mean, what are the chances that he would have been undrafted? We could have brought him right in. He would have said, heck yeah, sign me up, because there are only two or three teams.
Pretty high, I think. Yep. And that's the problem I have with the pick, is the Ravens did some good things in terms of trading. I thought it was really good that they reset their draft with a 2022 fourth. I thought, you know, they got decent value on that pick, a pretty good value, in fact, I'd say. But then, when you reach on a player like Ben Mason as a fifth-round pick as opposed to getting him as a UDFA, and, you know, there's a smorgasbord of other players still out there. I mean, Trill Williams of Syracuse was not drafted.
Neither was Ardarius. Ardarius would have been a good shot.
Got him.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's hard to say, but there's got to be some defensive lineman out there they liked enough that they'd have rather had him than Ben Mason if they knew they could have Ben Mason as a UDFA. And there's so few teams that actually use a fullback that I think that probably would have been the case.
That's a good call. Defensive line would have been a nice spot to address there. And I don't have offhand who would have been there, but I'm pretty sure that you could find at least a 2-down run stuffer. There are a bunch of big guys in here like Togier and Tonga. You know, yeah, it's Tonga and Togier, I think, went real late. But, you know, even if they added another safety, Ardarius Washington went undrafted. They could have added competition to Justice Hill, honestly. Themselves a back that could play special teams and kind of reset the clock on a young back. You have Gus that's we're going to be playing a tag game and wondering if he's signing. So I didn't understand it. Like I don't even want to grade this pick just out of respect, but he's a guy that, you know, I didn't scout any fullbacks. I didn't see any need for it. These are guys that usually come undrafted. There's only three teams use a fullback.
You know, it's just a handful. I mean,
right.
Tommy, sorry, not Tommy Togier. Kyaris Tonga is a fairly obvious one, and then I had one other in here, Jalen Twyman from Minnesota.
And he was a productive a productive player. Like his numbers, is if I remember what slid him down my board was his testing was awful. But I tell you, when it came to Jones the second, the outside linebacker, I think like a lot of his production came from Jalen Twyman. So so yeah, you know, it's no use crying over spilled milk, I guess, but let's just hope that
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, let's see if he can play a role, you know. Let's see if he can play a role and get himself active on special teams or something.
I got to be pissed about this for one more minute here, because Twyman didn't play in 2020. In 2019, he had 10.5 sacks, 12 tackles for loss.
So, but he tested poorly, so maybe that tells you that, you know, I don't know.
You're off.
Maybe, yeah, it really took to get the COVID, the 15 or whatever.
It's a gap year. Right. That could well be, and he could be a real uphill battle to get his work ethic into place and whatever. I want to believe that that's true and the Ravens really know what they're doing. Personally, fullbacks who play a lot of special teams, that's usually not a great combination. It certainly hasn't been for the Ravens in the past when they've had bigger, powerful fullbacks, which they seem to really like. You know, with him or Ricard or Neal or other guys they've had in the past, you know, they may be on special teams, but they're just not that valuable on special teams in terms of that. And it leads to deactivations when you only have a few snaps to hand out for the position in a game. It's just I don't like it as much. And there's nothing about Ben Mason that was so exciting to me that the Ravens just had to have him. Obviously, a Harbaugh connection from Michigan.
Well, Ken, I was just messing with you about the Twyman thing. I mean, obviously, there are other players that are be available. We can nitpick whether Twyman or somebody else, but yeah, I mean, I guess when I'm looking at it, is Ricard's a free agent, and then just take a look at our history with fullbacks. I think going even what Sam Gash was like the first notable one, and then we had Ovi Mahaly, and then we had Leach, and then we had
Ricard.
I mean, they all ended up on another team. So, as Ravens fans might not want to hear this, but with Ricard about to hit payday again after this season, Ben Mason might be your starting fullback, and maybe they don't want to use a fullback as much in the future, so they just want to have him just in case. But
I mean,
still,
there aren't any spots for just in case on this very tight roster. So
right.
if Ben Mason's going to stick around, it's going to have to be on IR. He could go to the practice squad and not be taken by anybody, but that would just further, you know, solidify the notion that you could have had him as an undrafted free agent. So anyway,
hey, good luck. I hope he turns into our favorite player. You know
me
what
too.
I mean?
Me too. I hope I'm considering buying a jersey of his in 2 years.
There you go.
That would be a wonderful place for Ben Mason to end up. Anyway, great talking through this draft for you. So many things. Such an interesting draft for the Ravens. Really nice for them to get up to 8 picks. You know, they had 9 originally as it started. Each one of them has a lot of texture to it in terms of why. And I thought they did a great job overall, given the year that just occurred and how difficult it must have been to scout players.
Yeah, I'm sure that deep breath, sigh of relief was taken after this draft just because of everything that went into it. So I had a lot of fun talking about it and being on with you in draft day. And I love hearing the feedback from the Ravens flock out there. So please, if there's something that you want to ask, or if you just want to argue with me or discuss something, you know, find me at Huddle It Up Films on Twitter or YouTube, and I'll be more than happy. I love talking ball, and you know, I'm not afraid to answer questions and talk it out.
Highly recommend. Jason really did a lot of obviously excellent research coming into this draft, you know, created a big board that we were really consistently entertained by and referring to as we went through that draft coverage. By the way, that's all posted out there now. The first round is on filmstudybaltimore.com. The second, day two will also be posted very soon. So he was on both nights with us. Some great stuff there and just some great discussion as we waited for these picks to occur. You can see how true Ravens nerds love to wait and handicap what's going on in the draft as it goes leading up to the Ravens picks.
Yeah, time flies when you're having fun. Like, there was a lot of stuff we didn't even talk about, man, that we could have really got into. So it was a fun draft. Thanks, Ken. I really appreciate you and everything.
All right. Well, great, great having you on here, folks. Take a look out there on filmstudybaltimore.com at new content, all kinds of stuff coming up. And don't be ashamed ever. Send me a email or a direct message on Twitter. My messages are open in terms of doing a film study short, particularly if you've got any kind of work you've done, any kind of analysis you've done. Love to have you on, discuss it. And if you're just passionate about something the Ravens ought to do, love to talk about that too. So a great time right now, by the way, between now and the beginning of camp to hit me up with those. We'll get them recorded very quickly, get them turned around quickly. There's not a big stack of these in front of you as there are at some other times of the year. But really appreciate it, folks. And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.